the Vedas. Evam, certainly. He, four. Lokanam, of all people. Shivaha, auspicious. Panta, path. Sanatanaha, eternal. Yam, which. Purve, in the past. Cha, and. Anusantastuhu, was rigidly followed. Yat, in which. Pramanam, the evidence. Janardana. Translation. The Vedas give the eternal regulative principles for auspicious advancement in human civilization, which have been rigidly followed in the past. The strong evidence of this principle is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is called Janardana, the well-wisher of all living entities. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Two-page purport. Please remain attentive. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has claimed that he is the father of all living entities, regardless of form. There are 8,400,000 different species of life forms, and Lord Krishna claims that he is the father of all. Because the living entities are parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are all sons of the Lord. And for their benefit, because they are hovering under the impression that they can lord it over material nature, the Vedas are given to them for their guidance. Therefore, the Vedas are called Apaurusheya, for they are not written by any man or demigod, including the first living creature, Brahma. Brahma is not the creator or author of the Vedas. He is also one of the living beings in this material world. Therefore, he does not have the power to write or speak the Vedas independently. Every living entity within this material world is subject to four deficiencies. He commits mistakes. He accepts one thing for another. He cheats, and he has imperfect senses. The Vedas, however, are not written by any living creature within this material world. Therefore, they are said to be a Apaurusheya. No one can trace out the history of the Vedas. Of course, modern human civilization has no chronological history of the world or the universe, and it cannot present actual historical facts older than 3,000 years. But no one has traced out when the Vedas were written, because they were never written by any living being within this material world. All other systems of knowledge are defective because they have been written or spoken by men or demigods who are products of this material creation. But Bhagavad Gita is a Apaurusheya, for it was not spoken by any human being or any demigod of this material creation. It was spoken by Lord Krishna, who is beyond the material creation. That is accepted by such stalwart scholars as Shankaracharya, not to speak of other acharyas such as Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, and Madhvacharya. Shankaracharya has accepted that Narayan and Krishna are transcendental. And in Bhagavad Gita also, Lord Krishna has established Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Mattak Sarvam Pravartate. I am the origin of everything. Everything emanates from me. This material creation, including Brahma and Shiva and all the demigods, has been created by him, for everything has emanated from him. He also says that the purpose of all the Vedas is to understand him, Vedaishcha Sarvair Aham Eva Vedyaha. He is the original Vedavit, or knower of the Vedas, and Vedanta Krit, or compiler of the Vedanta. Brahma is not the compiler of the Vedas. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is established, Tene Brahma Hrida, the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, instructed Brahma in the Vedic knowledge through his heart. Therefore, the evidence that Vedic knowledge is free from the defects of mistakes, illusions, cheating, and imperfection is that it is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janardana, and has thus been followed from time immemorial, beginning from Brahma. The Vedic religion, or the principles of the Vedas, have been followed by the highly cultured population of India since time immemorial. No one can trace out the history of Vedic religion. Therefore, it is Sanatana, and any blasphemy against the Vedas is calculated to be atheism. The Vedas are described as Setu, which means a bridge. If one wants to attain his spiritual existence, one has to cross an ocean of nescience. The Vedas are the bridge by which to cross such a great ocean. The Vedas describe how to divide the human race into four divisions according to quality and working capacity. This is a very scientific system, and it is also Sanatana, for no one can trace out its history, and it has no dissolution. No one can stop the system of Varna and Ashrama, or the castes and divisions. For example, whether or not one accepts the name Brahmana, there is a class in society which is known as the intelligent class and which is interested in spiritual understanding and philosophy. Similarly, there is a class of men who are interested in administration and in ruling others. In the Vedic system, these martially spirited men are called Kshatriyas. Similarly, everywhere there is a class of men who are interested in economic development, business, industry, and money-making. They are called Vaishyas. And there is another class who are neither intelligent nor martially spirited nor endowed with the capacity for economic development, but who simply can serve others. They are called Shudras, or the laborer class. This system is Sanatana. It comes from time immemorial, and it will continue in the same way. There is no power in the world which can stop it. Therefore, since this Sanatana Dharma is eternal, one can elevate himself to the highest standard of spiritual life by following the Vedic principles. It is stated that formerly the sages followed this system. Therefore, to follow the Vedic system is to follow the standard etiquette of society. But the followers of Lord Shiva, who are drunkards, who are addicted to intoxicants and sex life, who do not bathe and who smoke ganja, are against all human etiquette. The conclusion is that persons who rebel against all the Vedic principles are themselves the evidence that the Vedas are authoritative, because by not following the Vedic principles, they become like animals. Such animalistic persons are themselves evidence of the supremacy of the Vedic regulations. Om Gyanatim Anandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karam Hayam Tadati Swapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Samadhi Tanamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharini Visheshishwani Vali Pastachi Deshatarini Translation again. The Vedas give the eternal regulative principles for auspicious advancement and humanization, which have been rigidly followed in the past. The strong evidence of this principle is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is called Janardana, the well-wisher of all living entities. So we're very fortunate today to have the opportunity to discuss Srimad Bhagavatam in the Association of Pure Devotees of the Lord. Here, the Bhrigu Muni is continuing to speak, counter-cursing Nandishwara. And his contention is that because Nandi has cursed, has insulted the Brahmins, therefore he is violating Vedic principles, violating the Vedas, which are which establish that the Brahmins are to be worshipped. So because the Vedic principles are being violated, therefore those who are violating the Vedic principles are atheists. And in this verse, he's giving a summary. He's stating the glories of the Vedas, and he's giving evidence. If you want to speak in an assembly of cultured personalities, if you want to establish some point, you have to give evidence. Without giving evidence, then an intelligent person will not accept your conclusions. You may derive some name and fame from the common people by nicely presenting some speculation of your own concoction. But if you want to be accepted amongst intelligent persons, amongst cultured persons, you must defend your statements by quoting authority. Here, Bhrigu Muni is quoting as authority none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janardana. So, because this is a long purport, I'll just give a brief outline of the points that Srila Prabhupada is making here. First of all, he states that everyone in this material world, the conditioned souls in this material world, they have the impression that they can lord it over material nature. Therefore, the Supreme Lord, because he's compassionate to these living entities and he wants to deliver them from their misconception that they can lord it over material nature, he speaks the Vedic literature. And he states categorically that in order for human advancement to occur, in order for a human being or for a human society to become advanced, there has to be the following of Vedic principles. Without the following of Vedic principles, it is not possible to become elevated in human, either as an individual or as human society. And he gives four pieces of evidence for this statement. Remember, the statement is that the Vedas, without following Vedic principles, one cannot become elevated. Human society cannot become elevated. So four pieces of evidence Srila Prabhupada gives here. The first piece of evidence is that the Vedas were written, spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janardana. Therefore, they are free from defect. Okay, that's the first statement. The second statement is that the Vedic principles have been followed successfully since time immemorial, and the result has been the advancement of human civilization by following such principles. That's his second point. The third point is that even if someone does not, even if a civilization is devoid of understanding of the Vedic principles, still varnashram divisions can be seen. Even in, no matter what society, no matter how degraded a society may become, there are still four divisions: intelligent class, martial class, industrious, productive class, and laborer class. That even in a degraded society that does not, atheistic society, these four divisions exist. And the fourth, he gives a bit like a proof by negation of the converse. He says that we can see there's so many hippies. He doesn't use the word hippies, but he's, as Bhima Prabhu explained yesterday, he's talking about hippies here. He says you can see that people who are not following any Vedic principles, that they're not making advancement. They're becoming degraded, more and more and more and more degraded. So these are the four points that Srila Prabhupada makes in the purport. So ISKCON is supposed to be creating Vaishnavas. Vaishnavas are those who accept Vishnu as supreme and who accept the teachings of Lord Vishnu. So naturally, Vaishnavas, they aspire to establish Vedic principles in human society and practice them themselves. This is an inseparable quality of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava will always be, because the Vedas are given by Vishnu, a follower of Vishnu or a Vaishnava will always be following the Vedas in their personal life, and they will do whatever they can to establish Vedic principles in human society at large as well. Because, why is that? Why do we want to establish Vedic principles in human society? Because dharmak sunashtitak pungsang vishvak sena katasuyat notpadayat yadiritim shrama eva hi kevalam. Because a Vaishnava knows that if true Vedic principles are not established, even if someone is following so-called Vedic principles of dharma, that all that endeavor to follow dharma is simply useless labor if it does not awaken an attraction for the Supreme Lord. If one does not become a Vaishnava, become enthused to serve the Supreme Lord, then one's duty has not been successfully executed. And in material society, everyone is thinking they have so many duties to perform. But because they don't understand true Vaishnava principles, true Vedic principles, then everyone's simply wasting their time in the material world. So, since ISKCON is a society of Vaishnavas, it is our sacred duty to establish Vedic principles in human society as far as possible. Especially, ISKCON is a preaching mission. Before Bhaktivinoda Thakur was present on this planet, Gaudiya Vaishnavism was there were two groups of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. One was the Babajis and one was the Sahajiyas. So the Sahajiyas were taking advantage of the Gaudiya Vaishnava principles and simply engaging in degraded activities on the excuse of being followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the Babajis were simply performing bhajan in a strictly regulated fashion, personally serving Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu by chanting his holy names, generally separate from society. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he instituted this idea of mass preaching work to try to establish Vedic principles in modern society. So he gave many, many instructions about how to do this, and this is being followed by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his institutions that he founded, and including ISKCON and so many other mutts are there. They're following these principles of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So as we're carrying on our preaching, we're seeing that this material world is becoming more and more degraded every day. It's becoming more and more difficult to establish Vedic principles because people are going farther and farther and farther away from Vedic principles. You're all very active preachers here in this modern city of Bombay, so you know this very well, that everything is becoming more and more degraded. So our preaching has to be relevant. If we're going to be effective in reaching the modern denizens of this world, we have to be innovative. We have to be inspired preachers. We have to think of ways to attract the conditioned souls to the lotus feet of Krishna. Everyone is being bombarded by so many sense objects on a daily basis. Billboards, loud music, cinema, television, cell phones, so many things are constantly being bombarded by sense gratification. So it takes great great intelligence, how to attract these people who are so much attracted by so many things and bringing them to the lotus feet of Krishna. So we have to involve ourselves with this degraded civilization to a large extent. We have to be familiar with its workings. So there's a danger there, a very grave danger, that we can become implicated in this materialism, in the name of trying to rescue the conditioned souls and bring them to the lotus feet of Krishna. We may become a lost soldier. We're on the battlefield supposed to be fighting with Maya, and we have to mix superficially with Maya in order to understand how to do our preaching work. So there's a great danger that we may become attracted by Maya. And Maya is very expert at appearing to be Krishna. Maya is very expert at making herself appear as if she's Krishna's mercy, a great new way to preach, but actually it may be just a way that we become implicated in the material world. So there's a danger. And what is the, how to protect ourselves from this danger? Well, we have to constantly remain in the association of those who are highly advanced and realized in Krishna consciousness. It's the only way to inoculate ourselves from this, become immune from this material disease. We have to stay in good association. We have to either physically hear from the advanced devotees, or we have to remember their instructions, meditate on their instructions, carry out their instructions. And if we, when we're not in the association of advanced devotee, we have to be very much eager to acquire that association. We have to always be praying, Krishna, your Maya is very strong. Please give me the association of your advanced devotee. Let me remember your instructions so that I can be protected from all this. And we have to, just as Bhima Prabhu made this point yesterday, so important, emphasize it further. We should never become complacent. We should never think that we've reached some level of Krishna consciousness that we're immune from Maya's attack. We should never think that now I've had association with a very advanced devotee. Guru Maharaj, he has blessed me. So-and-so Vaishnava, he has blessed me. I am now good association for others. No, we should never become complacent like this. We should always be eager for advanced association. We should never think that we're advanced. Never be complacent. So, how do we go about this important preaching work? We should understand that there are two kinds of instructions that we've received from our Gurujanas. The instructions from our Gurujanas can be put in two categories. One is our bhajan pranali, how we should worship Krishna. Another is our Guru Seva, how we should practically serve the Guru's mission. Those who have bhakti adhikar for just performing the angas of bhakti non-stop, they can constantly be engaged in bhajan, in worship of Krishna. But those of us who don't have the adhikar to fully worship Krishna non-stop, we have some other kind of adhikar. So we have to understand what is our adhikar. We have to learn from our guru, from Vaishnavas, from the Shastra. We should be introspective and we should understand what is our qualification. If we see that we don't have qualification to just chant 24 hours a day, then we should understand what qualification we do have, and we should engage that qualification in the service of Guru. Most of us have karma adhikar. We need to be engaged in practical work in this world. We can't just sit and chant all day. So we have karma adhikar. So we perform practical work within the mission of the spiritual master. We should never think that I am preacher. I have compassion. I'm going to deliver the fallen souls. If we do that, we're in Maya's trap, and Maya will throw us down into gross illusion. We have to always understand that our guru is the preacher, that the Vaishnavas are the preacher, that Krishna is the preacher, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the preacher. Especially in this age, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came as guru. He came to give the practical instruction. He's the Yuga Acharya. He's the propounder of religious principles that are relevant for this day and age. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the preacher. Our Gurujanas are the preachers. And what can we do other than simply assist them in their preaching work? So this should be our mood. We should never think that I'm the preacher. We should always think that my guru is the preacher. The Vaishnavas are the preacher. Srila Prabhupada is the preacher. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the preacher. And they can actually deliver the fallen souls. My business is simply to do some small service because I have karma adhikara in any case. If I don't perform karma in the service of my Guru Maharaj, then I'm simply going to perform karma for my own sense gratification. So we engage our karma adhikara in assisting the Guru's mission. And there's so many things to do. Srila Prabhupada has created a big, huge house for, and there's so many opportunities to do service. If anyone thinks that they don't have any way to serve Krishna, then you please see Brajahari Prabhu today, and he'll be happy to engage you. So many ways, unlimited ways to serve Gauranga Mahaprabhu with our karma adhikar. And few rare souls may have jnana adhikar. They can be engaged in study in the service of the mission of the Guru's mission. So we have to do our bhajan, whatever instructions are there, chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles, attend the morning program. This is our bhajan pranali. These are instructions for all of us to do. And then we do our guru seva, whatever. According to our adhikar, we have some particular seva to perform, and we should do that seva. And we have to, and we should consider carefully what instruction of the guru is our bhajan, and what instruction of the guru is for guru seva. And what instruction is according to time, place, and circumstance, according to our adhikar. And the bhajan we should never, but the instruction for our bhajan we should never compromise on. And the practical seva that is given to us according to our adhikar, it may be adjusted from time to time according to the instructions of the spiritual master and his representatives. But the bhajan pranali should never be compromised. We should never think that I have so much service to do that I don't chant my 16 rounds, or I don't follow the principles, or I don't attend the programs. I don't take care of my bare minimum requirement for being a devotee. So, these are some points from this verse. If anyone has any questions or comments, we can discuss further. Yes, Mataji?
We have heard Prabhupada's statement that we need thoughtful and independent preachers, and at the same time, temple authorities may have their own program of services. So how do we reconcile the two?
Okay, who can help me understand? My hearing is just not good enough. If someone who understood the question can repeat it? Or
I said that we've heard Prabhupada saying that we need thoughtful and independent preachers, and at the same time, temple managers may have their own program of services for us. So how do we reconcile the two?
Sorry, I'm not getting it. Can someone who understands can repeat? I'm sorry. Yeah. Someone is saying that they have their independent preacher. No. No.
I'm saying that we heard Prabhupada speak of thoughtful, independent preachers.
Prabhupada what?
Prabhupada speaking of thoughtful, independent preachers.
What is that word? Thoughtful. Thoughtful. Srila Prabhupada wanted thoughtful, independent preachers.
Yes. At the same time, temple managers do have their program of services for us. How do you reconcile the two?
So, Prabhupada, my understanding of what Srila Prabhupada said is he wanted independently thoughtful preachers. Independently thoughtful preachers. I think that was Srila Prabhupada's words. So how do we reconcile that with being under the management of the temple authorities who have their own instructions for us and on what our service should be? We have to be independently thoughtful in the sense that we should not be blind followers. This is what Srila Prabhupada meant by independently thoughtful preachers. He did not want blind followers, someone who simply understands the order of the spiritual master superficially and blindly follows. So if someone is an independently thoughtful preacher, then naturally they'll be cooperative with the management as long as the management is within the scope of the instructions for the institution. In other words, if a manager is telling devotees to do something which is contrary to our principles, then we should not blindly follow them and break principles. So, in order to actually carry out the mission of the spiritual master, we have to work cooperatively together. And practically speaking, that requires some authority structure. But that authority structure does not mean that we give up our intelligence and our individuality and become robots, blind followers. And to another point also is that within the scope of the managerial requirements, there's a lot of room for innovation. So innovation is welcome and is necessary, provided we stay connected to the basic institutional priorities. and we stake and we stay well, become you stay remain well situated within our prescribed duties for the institution. So I don't think there's any contradiction between being independently thoughtful and being a soldier for the mission. There's scope for both. Okay? Another question? Or comment?
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, yesterday a similar question was asked in the Sunday feast to Radhanath Maharaj. I came to know. And so Radhanath Maharaj replied the same thing, so the same phrase, like independent, thoughtful. We should be independently thoughtful preacher. So Maharaj there said that it means that we have instructions from our guru and authority. Like say guru says, go and do college preaching. So then we are independent in how to execute, how to do the things, like how many days to go to the colleges or when to go to the colleges, what should be the menu when boys come, which item should be served to them. So all these things, we are independent in thinking, like how to do, what to do. But the instruction should be followed. But then how and what, the details, it's up to us, how we want to do it. And if we need some clarification, then we can always approach our authority if we have some doubts. Thank you.
Very nice. Thank you for adding those points. We have our authority structure is Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. It's not Guru, Guru, Guru. We have to follow Guru, we have to follow Shastra, we have to follow Sadhu, which means Vaishnava tradition. So all these three things we have to follow, and there's no contradiction between them in actuality. If it appears that there's some contradiction, then we have to think again. We have to reconsider. So it's no secret that in ISKCON there have been those who are taking the part of gurus who have given instructions to their followers to do things which are contrary to Shastra and Sadhu. This has gone on. It happens. It happens in every institution. So, an independently thoughtful preacher will, if he receives an instruction that does not appear to be in agreement with Sadhu and Shastra, he has to consider very carefully what is to be done. He has to accept a bona fide authority who can give the right instruction. Thank you. Anything else? Any other questions, comments? Yes, Asim Krishna. Microphone. Okay.
Hare Krishna. In the age of Kali Yuga, everyone is situated in fourth class grade. Varnashram civilization is clubs. Then how we can classify it in human society? Who is Brahmana, who is a Kshatriya, who is a Vaishya?
You're saying everyone is born Sudra? Is that what you said?
In the age of Kali Yuga, everyone is situated in fourth class grade.
Fourth class means Suja. Everyone's born. Yeah. Kalau Suja Sambhava. You mean?
Varnashram civilization is clubs. Then how we can classify it in human society? Who is a Brahmana? Who is a Kshatriya? Everyone is situated on fourth class grade.
Chatur Varnyang Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. Not by Janma, Guna and Karma. Right? We have to see by their quality and their work. And you can, and it's not that one is fixed in a particular quality. Someone may in bad association, a Brahmin can become a Sudra. So by the influence of bad association. So, in Kali Yuga, there's no structure for anyone to perfectly execute any of the four orders. One cannot actually conduct oneself as a perfect Brahmin in modern Kali Yuga. It's practically impossible. No one can conduct themselves as a perfect Kshatriya. But still, Srila Prabhupada insisted that we establish at least in the cities it's not possible. Let's put it that way. In modern Kali Yuga cities, it's not possible to be a Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya fully, purely, properly. Only in an agrarian society is it possible to actually institute Varnashram system. Now, it's not that there won't be cities, but there won't be these kind of cities with big industries and so many things. And even in Vedic civilization there were cities where traders were there and they traded in the produce of the coming from the villages, and they dealt in salt and gold and different things that were needed by the citizens. But in modern Kali Yuga, with all these factories and things, it's just not possible. So Srila Prabhupada wanted us to establish Varnashram somehow or other. We haven't figured out how to do that yet, but it remains as one of our duties, one of our instructions from Srila Prabhupada. Okay? Anything else? Yeah.
Hare Krishna. A true Vaishnava, he does not believe in doing any harm to any living creature. In Bhagavatam, we come across so many instances where Vaishnavas curse and counter-curse.
Vaishnavas what?
Vaishnavas curse and counter-curse each other. There are so many instances in Srimad Bhagavatam where Vaishnavas curse and counter-curse each other. So does it mean they are not true Vaishnavas?
Vaishnava is what?
Curse.
Oh, curse and counter curse. Where is that? Where is that in the Bhagavatam?
No. What I'm trying to say is, you see, true Vaishnava, he does not believe in doing any harm to any other.
Yeah.
But in Srimad Bhagavatam, we come across so many instances where, one Vaishnava curses another Vaishnava, and then he counter curses.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, for example, Daksha, he cursed Shiva.
We're not talking about Vaishnavas here.
They are not Vaishnavas. Shiva and Daksha, they are not Vaishnavas.
Lord Shiva was not engaged in cursing.
Nandishwara cursed, someone.
Huh?
Nandishwara also pronounced curse.
He's
so
a Shiva.
Not...
He's a disciple of Shiva. Of course, your original premise that Vaishnavas don't want to harm anyone, that applies to pure Vaishnavas. So we can say that perhaps we can see that some worship of Vishnu is going on amongst these personalities mentioned here. Nandishwara, Daksha, they may have been worshipping Vishnu to some extent, because Vishnu is the ultimate enjoyer of all Vedic sacrifices. But this is not pure Vaishnavism. This is not pure Vaishnavism. A pure Vaishnava will not want to harm any living entity. But a Bhakta Mishra Karmi is a Karmi, basically, and they may be seen to do activities of course, Bhrigu Muni and Nandishwara, they're thinking that they're doing good. Like, Bhrigu Muni's actually stating that he's not cursing. He's stating that it's already happened. Because of Nandishwara's behavior, he's already at the level of atheism. So he's saying that he's not really cursing. He's just saying, you're already degraded. You're already degraded. So he's trying to help Nandishwara. Of course, he's angry, but his motivation is trying to help. Just like when Narada Muni cursed Nalakuvara and Manigriva, it was for their benefit. It was not to hurt them. For the benefit, because they were simply becoming degraded, more and more degraded by their activities. So he cursed them to stand as trees so they wouldn't be anymore commit sin. And that at the end they got the benediction of having Krishna's darshan. So if a Vaishnava curses, it's for the benefit of the person that's cursed. I answered already. Anything else? Thank you very much. Very kind of you. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.